Welcome to another episode of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. A progressive and populist insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining show on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people and not just the elite few. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters from his mid-Michigan attic, it's time for the award-winning Pat Johnston. It's all yours, Pat.
Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am your host, Pat Johnston. Thanks again for listening. And dear leader, Trump's approval rating is now wallowing at 33%, with 64% of Americans disapproving of his job, according to a Reuters Ipsos poll. And, you know, I just can't imagine why that would be. I mean, he's such the greatest guy in the world. He was going to do everything, bring us back, right? Bring us back to the golden age of America. Well, we're mired in this war on Iran that he and Israel's corrupt and genocidal Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu's gotten us into. It's costing us in terms of U.S. service members' lives that have been lost and over $100 billion spent so far, but that price will continue to go higher. Our munitions are depleted. We've got American crew members literally jumping off the USS Lincoln, which has been stationed near Iran for the last 9 months. The crew members are reporting food shortages, mental health decline, and plumbing stoppages on an American battleship, really. But rather than, you know, fight on their behalf, you've got people like Fox News host Joey Jones telling these Navy crew members that they volunteered to serve this country, and, you know, they shouldn't really be complaining, that they simply are bored. You do remember, at least those of us old enough to remember, that these are the exact same MAGA Republicans during the Bush-Cheney years who pointed and wagged their fingers at you, at me, at all of us in the working class, saying, "How dare you criticize George W. Bush and Dick Cheney for this Iraq war quagmire? How dare you? Don't you care about our troops?" Oh, that was always their go-to question whenever you would question George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. "Don't you care about the troops?" It was their way to shut up any kind of criticism. See, some things never change. They never cared about the troops. MAGA Republicans never cared about the troops. They never cared about the troops because the troops who fight Middle Eastern wars for Israel and oil execs are, to them, just silly, stupid, working class Americans. As dear leader called them, the suckers. That's how they see us. They being the billionaire Epstein class who's never seen a war they don't like. And one more note for this Joey Jones on Fox News. You say these Navy crew members volunteered to serve the United States of America? You're right, they did. Then why are they overseas fighting on behalf of Israel's right-wing and corrupt genocidal government? You're right, they should be protecting the United States of America. They shouldn't be overseas protecting Israel. Now, the economy is in shambles for the working class. We continue to have this stupid war in Iran. Gas prices are high while we're cutting back on clean energy. Americans are losing health care coverage while their wages can't keep up with inflation. And we've got the Trump regime putting billionaire big tech bro data centers in the backyards of working class families throughout Michigan and the rest of America. I'm sorry, but again, how is Michigan's MAGA Republican corporate clown and U.S. Senate candidate Florida Mike Rogers going to tell Michiganders that things will get better with yet another MAGA Republican in office? I'm still not getting that. Nobody's really explaining that just yet. Everything is in shambles, but Mike Rogers says, "Vote for me. I'll continue doing the same." Leftoflansing@gmail.com is the best way to reach me. Big news out of Florida this week as Democratic Socialist and State Representative Angie Craig upset the corporate establishment Democratic Party's pick of Alex Vindman, even though Vindman outspent Angie Nixon 16-1. Angie Nixon ran on a Medicare for All platform, a data center moratorium platform, and introduced a resolution to stop spending hard-earned taxpayer money on Israel's genocide in Gaza. Hey, and I'll be darned, everybody, she won. Shocking, right? Not really. Now, some Democratic Socialists in Florida did lose their races, and that means establishment House member and pro-Israeli spending Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz is probably going to head back to Washington. That sucks. But for those DSA members and progressives who did lose their races there, just like here in Michigan, they're still part of an effort to begin building awareness and building an infrastructure for a real progressive working class movement. Yeah, some battles are going to be lost, but they're going to help in the long run. Losing or getting negative press was always in the cards for progressives and Democratic Socialists, but getting the message out there to begin with is half the battle to taking over the Democratic Party and to restoring the working class. Coming up here in a few moments, Brandon Snyder will join me to talk about the working class movement that's happening here in Michigan and elsewhere across the country. Mr. Snyder is the executive director of Michigan's Working Families Party, which endorsed Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed for Michigan's U.S. Senate seat, as well as progressive congressional candidates William Lawrence and Donovan McKinney. And Mr. McKinney, of course, ousted incumbent Democratic Congressman Sri Thendahar. We'll talk more about the Working Families Party, what it hopes to accomplish in changing the Democratic Party back to the Working Class Party, and why it's backing those three candidates that I just mentioned. So Brandon Snyder will join me here in just a few moments. Meanwhile, Michigan Democratic candidate for governor, the current Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson, just announced that she is choosing Michigan Senate Majority Leader Winnie Brinks to serve as her lieutenant governor nominee. And it makes sense for Benson. It really does because, you know, she's from the east side of the state, and maybe getting someone with name recognition like Winnie Brinks, who's on the west side of the state in Grand Rapids, on the same ticket is a good move. And I get the optics of also having two Democratic Party women on the ticket against the MAGA Republican ticket of Congressman John James and State Representative Jay DeBoer in this race. So I get the contrast there, but I really don't think either picks, DeBoer for John James and Winnie Brinks for Jocelyn Benson, are really going to make much of a difference. And usually a lieutenant governor pick really should be the bulldog on the ticket to go after the other side. I'm sorry, but Winnie Brinks hasn't necessarily wowed everyone in her fights against MAGA House Speaker Matt Hall, for instance. So there's that, unfortunately. However, still a much better ticket than the John James, Jay DeBoer, MAGA election-denying fascist. So there's no question on that one whatsoever. Jocelyn Benson at least fights for democracy and fights for our vote. She's never fought to cancel our vote, my vote, your vote, and she's never kissed Dear Leader Trump's ring by saying that the 2020 election was rigged against Trump. John James, that's what he's been saying of late. Speaking of democracy and protecting our vote, it appears the corporate MAGA-backed American Citizens for Voting ballot initiative will fail to make the Michigan ballot after all. Awesome news there. It appears that the signature gathering process was ironically fraudulent. Of course it is, because if it's done by MAGA, it's usually illegal or corrupt. According to Michigan Advance's Kyle Davidson, the State Bureau of Elections determined that the proposal failed to turn in enough valid signatures by some 12,000 names. Now, this initiative would have made it a constitutional amendment here in Michigan that only U.S. citizens can vote, and like the federal voter suppression MAGA bill, I think it was called the SAFE Act, this would also require many to search around for their birth certificates, especially for women who may not have kept their original last name after marriage. Remember that the next time you hear these white Christian nationalists claim that Islam is anti-woman. And of course, remember that as these same white Christian nationalists also try to force American women to have their rapist babies. Now, this will go to the Board of State Canvassers, where they usually go along with the Elections Bureau, but in these times, we're never quite sure. But it is a good sign so far that that stupid amendment will never make the ballot. Speaking of ballot initiatives, though, the Michigan for Money Out of Politics initiative will be on the ballot this November. Now let's give a hand for that one. The Board of Canvassers approved the language of the proposal, which would ban DTE and Consumers Energy and any business with a state contract of over $250,000 from making any campaign contributions to anyone seeking office or already in office. I mean, this is groundbreaking, everyone. It is. This is tremendous. It is a tremendous victory for working class Michiganders, a tremendous victory, and one that will reverberate throughout our state government. And once it passes, it will reverberate across the country. Everyone will see that Michigan is taking back some power. The working class in Michigan is beginning to take back some power. Because this will be we, the working class, regaining a bit of our own government. Yes, this proposal only tackles the spending of our regulated utilities, but considering how DTE has donated to over 90% of the state legislature, including the governor's office, this is a good start. Now, DTE and Consumers Energy will rely on some big lobbying firms to file lawsuits against the proposal, no doubt about that. But it shows how much the working class wants to protect our government from these corporate leeches and help protect ourselves. It's not a right or left issue. It really isn't. It's a working class issue, and it's going to pass very easily. I mean, it's no wonder some Republican lawmakers in the state here in Michigan are already backing the proposal. I mean, it's a slam dunk and a win for the people while DTE fights to direct our state government to force AI data centers in towns across the state. So this is what the people want. They are tired of being elbowed out by corporate interests and never heard by our state government. And that's why progressive U.S. Senate candidate Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed is backing this proposal, known as the Mop-Up Michigan proposal. I mean, it's a no-brainer for Dr. Abdul and his campaign. You'd also think it's a no-brainer for the MAGA Republican Senate candidate and Dr. Abdul's opponent, Florida Mike Rogers. Now, Florida Mike's accepted some DTE cash, some AIPAC cash, lots of AT&T cash since he worked on supporting the surveillance state when he was in Congress last decade. Yeah, that's right, MAGA Republicans. Florida Mike Rogers is all about flock cameras, and he's all about allowing telecom corporations to follow your every step without any safeguards for your privacy. He's never cared about you and your constitutional rights. Never. He cares about corporate rights and corporate profits. Now, I seem to recall how you guys once cared about the swamp and Big Brother watching your every move. But Florida Mike Rogers is the very definition of celebrating Big Brother watching your every move. Florida Mike Rogers also never saw a war he didn't like, and he was a big, big, big supporter of the Iraq War. I mean, that only drained the United States of some $3 to $4 trillion, but you know what? It was done to keep us safe. Don't you dare criticize the war, or else you hate the troops. And now, Florida Mike Rogers is all about Trump and Israel's war in Iran, which is driving up costs, driving up inflation, and hurting the working class's ability just to get slightly ahead. But at least Florida Mike Rogers is about watching your every move. All Florida Mike Rogers cares about is making money and using government to help him do it. Because who says that government helps create jobs, right? I mean, he's a basic Washington, D.C. whore. That's what he is. And all he cares about is, number one, that's himself. He doesn't care that Dear Leader Trump tried to nullify all of our votes in 2020. He doesn't care that Dear Leader Trump and his regime sent armed thugs dressed up as the ICE Gestapo to harass, terrorize, and kill on American streets. He doesn't care about that. Florida Mike Rogers doesn't care that you know, after working for years to represent telecommunications lobbyists in Congress, that he moved on to Florida to make millions working for telecommunications companies. I'll be darned. The revolving door of corporate and government corruption just continues, and Mike Rogers is the poster child for that kind of corruption. We've watched it happen here in Lansing, which is why we are going to pass the Mop-Up Michigan ballot proposal here. We're seeing it in Washington, D.C. with the Trump regime. And if you wonder why Florida Mike Rogers wants to get back into the game right now at this moment, it's because corruption is the name of the game in D.C. And with the Trump regime in power for at least the next 2 years, Florida Mike Rogers has to get it while the getting's good. I mean, you don't think that he's noticed how someone like MAGA Michigan Republican Congresswoman Lisa McClain in the Thumb Region and her husband just happened to buy and sell stocks at suspicious times, especially after she's visited the White House within the last few weeks? Florida Mike Rogers also holds large amounts of big tech investments that'll grow by forcing more and more billionaire tech bro data centers in our backyards. It's all about the corruption. It's all about using government to enhance their pocketbooks. Florida Mike Rogers is about the dollar bills, y'all. He doesn't care about your pocketbook. He doesn't care about the working class. This is the same guy who essentially represented the pharmaceutical industry when he was in Congress. And this is the same guy who pushed to relax opioid restrictions. And then, after he did such a thing and championed that cause, 30,000 Michiganders died from opioid overdoses over the last 20-something years. Has that caused Florida Mike Rogers to reflect, let's say, on where he went wrong? You know better. And then there's this. Jake Lang, a MAGA-supporting, racist, bigot, anti-Muslim douchebag and January 6th rioter, appeared in Dearborn this week to hold a racist MAGA rally against Muslim Michiganders. Of course, these are the real Trump supporters. These are the true white Christian nationalists who hate people of color. But also are the same people who actually refuse to follow the words of Jesus. And then there's this from Michigan Advance's Tyler Scott. This Jake Lang organized the protest with the help of Detroit pastor Lorenzo Sewell, a supporter of President Donald Trump, who was criticized for attempting to enrich himself through a cryptocurrency scheme after speaking at Trump's second inauguration. Sewell is also a member of the Faith Coalition leadership team of Republican U.S. Senate nominee Florida Mike Rogers. Now, I'm waiting, everyone. I am waiting to watch 24-hour nonstop coverage from the corporate political media demanding Florida Mike Rogers not only denounce Jake Lang, but also disassociate himself from this Detroit pastor, Lorenzo Sewell. Because welcoming an anti-democratic, racist, anti-Muslim, MAGA bigot like Jake Lang is something that Florida Mike Rogers, hey, let's be honest, he obviously believes in it, right? I mean, that's how we play this game, right? MAGA, is this how we play this game? Corporate media? Now, I'm just going to throw this out there. It may be hard for some of you to understand this, but progressive talker Hassan Piker has never held rallies with people spewing hatred towards Muslim Americans, and he's never held rallies, as far as I know, with people carrying around Nazi flags. I don't know, but I think perhaps someone in the Lansing political media and the national media, you know, would want to ask Florida Mike Rogers if he supports Pastor Lorenzo Sewell's radicalism and bigotry. He is part of Florida Mike's team, after all, but why am I wasting time worrying if that'll ever happen? It won't. Meanwhile, Dr. Abdul's leading in a recent poll by Susquehanna, showing him to be up by around 7 points. Now, I'm not taking that as anything since the polls have been disastrously off for a long time now. But last week, a Fox News poll showed Mike Rogers up by a couple of points, and everyone, and I mean just about everyone, hyperventilated. I'm probably not going to see the same kind of reaction from this poll, and that's probably because it goes against the MAGA Republican narrative, the corporate media narrative, and yes, the corporate Democratic Party, a narrative. Brandon Snyder is coming up here in just a moment. You're listening to LOL.
A working class voice for the working class. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. If you'd like to tell Pat what you think of the show and maybe even congratulate him for providing podcasting excellence, oh brother, email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com. If you have an idea for a guest or a topic for a future show, email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com. We'd like to thank you for listening and for helping spread the progressive message in the Mitten State and beyond. Now, here's Pat Johnston.
That's right. The best way to reach me is always either on Left of Lansing's Patreon page or leftoflansing@gmail.com. All right. When working class progressives like Dr. Abdul Al-Sayed or Donovan McKinney or William Lawrence won their primary races in Michigan a couple of weeks ago, those wins were especially important for Michigan's Working Families Party. Now, it endorsed all three candidates who now move on to be the voices and the faces of this working class populist movement in Michigan's general election come November here. And it's showing how the Working Families Party's message and values are gaining traction with voters across Michigan as well as across the nation. Brandon Snyder is the executive director of Michigan's Working Families Party, and I'm just happy he's able to take some time out of his book schedule to talk with us here for a few this week. Brandon, thanks so much for joining us here on Michigan's premier progressive podcast.
Thanks, Pat. Great to meet you. Great to be on Left at Lansing.
A lot of voters, you know, have been hearing a lot of about Democratic Socialism and Democratic Socialists of America, especially over the last year or so. But the Working Families Party is its own entity. So, Brandon, for those who may not be entirely familiar with it, what is the Working Families Party all about?
Yeah, thanks for that. So Working Families Party, or WFP, is a national political organization that operates in many places as a political third party. So it was founded in 1998 in New York as a community and labor coalition with the aims of utilizing the third party ballot line, utilizing New York's fusion voting opportunities to be able to elect progressives, be able to elect working class economic justice champions, while being able to challenge corporate Democrats. So in New York, as well as in a number of other states like Connecticut, Rhode Island, Oregon, and Pennsylvania, the WFP is a full-fledged political party, capital P party. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that it has its own candidate line. It has its own money that it's able to take in political money like other parties do. And it runs its own candidates through elections. In Michigan, we don't have a candidate line. We don't have a party line on the ballot. What we do instead, what we do differently, like other states like California, like Wisconsin, and some other states in Arizona, Colorado, is that we operate solely as a community labor coalition where we utilize the Democratic primary and nonpartisan elections to recruit, run, and win for progressive candidates. You know, in 2025, here in Michigan, here in Detroit, what we did was we supported Denzel McCampbell and Gabriela Santiago Romero, the incumbent, in their runs against two pretty bad Democrats, Tyrone Carter, who's a state rep, and Karen Whitsett, who is an outgoing state rep. And what we did was we built a community labor coalition of organizations like Detroit Action, where I spent 8 years as the executive director, Michigan United, where I was the organizing director for a number of years, SEIU, Michigan Liberation, a number of local partners working inside. So with the campaign on the coordinated side, you know, helping support, doing day-to-day field work, as well as outside of the campaign, sort of the traditional tactics that folks see. And we did that, you know, honestly, with DSA. We did that, you know, different than a lot of states and a lot of sort of the fights that you see on the progressive left. We see DSA as a true partner in the goals of building a vibrant working class multiracial left here in Michigan. So for us, just as we saw this summer with Donovan McKinney, you know, we work hand in hand, or with Chris Gilmer Hill, we work hand in hand. You know, DSA in Michigan does not see itself as a political party, but rather as a political organization looking to pursue socialist policies and elect socialist candidates. For us, we have a broader tent than that. What we want is working class champions of all stripes, you know, folks who are a part of labor unions, folks who are formerly incarcerated, folks who are renters, folks who are tenants, you know, the same, who can run for office, who can win and be able to take on the challenge of working and supporting communities and not corporations.
So, okay, that's an interesting point, though, that you made, is that you're working with DSA and you guys see yourselves more as allies here with this working class movement.
That's right.
Cool. And thanks for kind of clarifying all that, too, because I had some questions on that. But you were able to answer them all right there. So I appreciate that, Brandon. So I hear everything that you're saying. So, I mean, so this is strictly a real populist movement here that you guys are advocating.
Yeah. You know, my background, I've been a community organizer now for almost 20 years. I got my start doing organizing coming out of college. I got swept up in the sea of hope and change during the Obama era. And, you know, I spent about 5 years doing faith-based organizing in the South. And so, you know, I moved back here to Michigan, where I'm into Detroit, where I'm born and raised. And the work that I've done has been with progressive candidates and progressive causes, whether it's supporting our now Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist on his clerk's run in 2017, supporting insurgent candidates, you know, in 2014 and 2016, as well as, you know, helping work to be the executive director and founder of Detroit Action and a number of our other progressive organizations. And so when we think about this populist movement that we're trying to build here in the state, it requires people of all stripes, of all races, of all creeds, being able to see that they aren't enemies to each other, that it's not the Christian and the Muslim and the Jew that should be hating each other. It's that it's the billionaires, that it's the merchant, the folks who are putting us against each other. In order to do that work, we actually have to be able to build big, big, big tents that allow us to be able to run on candidates, yes, but also on causes, and be able to fuse those together so that way people who don't care about politics, people who don't see themselves in the current construct of the political system, actually have opportunities, to take action.
You kind of touched on it a little bit when you were talking about yourself, how you got involved, but what did make you gravitate towards the WFP and, what it's fighting for?
So just in brief, so I mentioned a little bit that I'd gotten into this work in college. So, my parents are working class folks. They, both also impacted by the war on drugs, incarcerated by, both incarceration, but also addiction, robbing Peter to pay Paul. Both of my parents were union members, and that actually is what offered us the stability and the ability to be able to keep a roof over our head and, food in our bellies. And so I was one of the first people in my family to go to college. I got a full ride scholarship to the University of Michigan. Being a little black boy in, the mid-2000s, wearing tall tees and baggy jeans in Ann Arbor, felt like I was, a Martian who had just touched down on Earth in many cases. And so I felt as an outsider. And so I turned to the community of the NAACP and the Black Student Union and the folks who were in political science class who would come out, and you get extra credit if you go canvass. And, I latched onto it. And, the things that actually shaped my career and got me to see organizing as the call for the rest of my life is, as I mentioned, I got swept up in the sea of hope and change towards the end of college, supporting and volunteering on Obama's first run in Ann Arbor. The second thing is, I had a mentor, Dr. Greg Marcus, who was a 40-year University of Michigan professor and Golden Apple winner, and taught political science entry classes, but he also taught advanced classes on city politics and community organizing. And we would go volunteer for groups like Moses in Detroit and go to the Capuchin Soup Kitchen on the East Side. And we were working to organize folks who had been just recently homeless and, were going to the soup kitchen. So this is again like 2007. And we were working with folks on things that, might sound like small potatoes, but we were working with folks around bed bugs and like access to fair treatment and homeless shelters for folks. And seeing people who don't quote unquote meet the face of homelessness, and really expanding my mind to around access to opportunity and like what does it mean for who has it and who doesn't. It was the first light bulb. But the real light bulb for me for organizing to see this as like my pathways, towards the end of college, I got arrested, being stupid. And I thought the smartest thing that I can do at the time was hide out in the Washtenaw County Jail, not tell my family, not tell my friends, and wait it out and hope, the summer and the legal situation would resolve itself. And while I was in the Washtenaw County Jail, I was meeting folks who were younger than me, who looked like me, from Ypsilanti, from Ann Arbor, from Belleville. And they looked at me as if I had three heads. Like, you know what? You go to Michigan, you're not on the football team, you're black, and you're in here. And I was looking at them as they had three heads. Like, what do you mean you go to, Huron? What do you mean you go to Pioneer? What do you mean, like, you live in Ann Arbor and you've got some of the best schools, some of the best housing, whatever, and you're trapped in a cycle of poverty? And my mentor was able to untangle my legal situation, so I have a level of privilege that a lot of those folks don't have. But he challenged me to really think about like the access to opportunity, to who has it and who doesn't, and what does it mean to be able to break open that hamster wheel that many of us are on around who gets access to this quote unquote American dream, and like, is it real, and what's burying us? So many folks who I've met were some of the smartest folks that I ever, met in my life, but were again trapped on a hamster wheel of poverty and exploitation. And I got a chance to follow that experience to do work in the South as a community organizer doing faith-based organizing. Did a bunch of work here in Michigan, as I mentioned, and then was the executive director and founder of Detroit Action for 8 years. And so I stepped out of the role of leading Detroit Action in 2024. But there were a number of us from other community organizations, base building organizations, that were thinking about this constant problem that we were having of, one, electoral politics not really mattering to our membership. So I led folks who were young folks, homeless folks, formerly incarcerated folks, et cetera, working class folks. And politics, who gets elected, who doesn't work, get elected, not as interesting as the issues that they're coming here for. The second thing that we were thinking about was not having the tools and a lot of the structures needed to really take advantage of the political moment that we were seeing in uncommitted, where people were getting fired up to go out and vote for something. And like, what does it mean? Like, if you've experienced this political moment, this political awakening, how do you absorb those that who are excited? And then, the final thing that really sort of shaped this idea of like, hey, we want to build a working families party is progressives here in Michigan. We were getting our asses kicked, especially in Detroit. Like, we were thinking about primaries. You don't have to be a veteran of that to see that. Like, in so many cases, progressives were getting outspent by corporations, or we weren't able to identify the right talent, or we didn't have enough people who had the experience, or candidates who come from our communities, but were juggling working a job, raising a family, and then having to run, a full-scale campaign operation. And so we did a little bit of work and soul searching, and we decided that we want to build a working families party. And as I was stepping out, I was actually recruited by the National WFP and our local friends here at We the People, at Detroit Action, at Michigan United, and Mothering Justice to say that I should be the first state director.
I think I'm understanding why too, after everything you just said there, and what got you involved, and also looking how to try to change the system and within too. And I
That's
think
right.
that's the best way to go about it. Taking on the establishment, as you said, very, very difficult to do, but you're starting to see some rewards right now. And I would say what we just saw in this past primary shows that a message like from the WFP is resonating with citizens, because we just saw voting numbers go through the roof. So I think people are excited for that kind of message, and candidates who will fight for that kind of message.
Yeah, that's right. We've had overall increase in turnout for the primary on the Democratic side compared to 2024. And that's because people wanted to go vote for someone who would do something.
Vote
When you
for
look at
someone and vote for something.
You look at Will Lawrence in Lansing, and he's not just talking about like, vote for me, send me to Congress. He's saying, I will work to fight this proliferation of data centers and fight against, the big tech corporations. And I come from this community, and I have experience working on housing and climate change and being able to build bridges. And people want to feel a part of something, because far too often our politics has made people feel isolated. Or how the Democratic Party traditionally talks about voters is bodies and or numbers or butts and seats, instead of like actual actors who have agency. And so, people want to feel a part of something, but then they also, again, because of the rising cost and the sort of uncertainty that we're feeling in the world, people are mad and they want to do something about it. And so candidates like Abdul or Donovan or Will Lawrence or even Yusuf Rabi in Ann Arbor are giving people the opportunity to like take action and do something about it.
Brandon, I've posited here for quite some time over the last couple of years that Michigan, I think, has been in a populist mood. And in fact, I think the working class in the state has been in that mood for the last decade or so. I mean, we saw with Bernie Sanders' primary win over Hillary Clinton back in 2016. And yeah, okay, now just hear me out here, but Donald Trump's victory in the election in 2016, I
Totally,
think that,
totally. Yeah.
I think that showed something too. Now, of course, he talked a right-wing populist game, and he's governing, of course, like a aristocratic authoritarian who's only out there for he and the Epstein class. So I understand that, but it was still, he was using a populist message. But Michiganders, I think, have become more and more populist, and they are tired of the current leadership. And I'd say that's why the WFP, for example, has experienced some victories over here the last few years, because the working class is in such an anti-establishment mood. And I still don't think some within the Democratic Party are getting that.
I would tend to agree. And I think that one, how we define and how we think about working class identity here in Michigan is shaped and formed by NAFTA, by deindustrialization, by industrialization of the auto industry and all the affiliates and the Great Migration, which brought my great grandparents to Detroit. But then it's also shaped by, like as you said, that populist mood of people, being angry by NAFTA, by deindustrialization, by all of the change that's happened in our communities, and no one really giving them answers except this is for our benefit. And, like you mentioned, Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, but if you even stretch farther back, Jesse Jackson and his primary runs and his caucus runs was able to tap into that mood and that sentiment to be able to build something bigger and build a movement. And so that's what we're hoping to be able to do through the work of the Working Families Party here in Michigan in 2026 and beyond, is, tap into both the anger that exists, but give people opportunity, do the work of naming our shared values while naming the villains who are causing us harm to our families, and then giving people a pathway forward to create something bigger and better.
That's a great point that you brought up about Jesse Jackson winning the primary here in Michigan. What was that, back in 1988, I think?
88 and 84, yeah.
Yeah, 88 and 84. That's right. 84 and 88. That's right. Yeah, that is a great point. And that just shows you, I think, where Michiganders are and have been for a very, very long time. That kind of maybe we were leading the way when it comes to fighting for the working class. What do you say of critics of a working class populist progressive movement who argue, I've been seeing this on social media. I've been actually seeing this in some opinion articles that these movements, they only connect with college graduates. These movements are rich college graduates who don't really understand the working class. What's your counter argument
Yeah,
to that?
but I think that misses the moment, right? I went to Michigan. I graduated at the height of the recession. So I have friends who also graduated from Michigan, but had to go back home to Virginia or go back to New Jersey or go back to Illinois and go work at Trader Joe's. I know people, one of my really close friends is a PhD. She studies, women in sports and Title IX and the entire deal. And, her entire experience as being a PhD, this highly trained person, as someone that the independents would talk about, is having to work a second job because the promise of academia is not paying. And, we can discuss all the reasons why that and structures of why academics aren't being paid as well. But the underlying point is that people who are highly educated because of the cost of education, because of the massive student debt that many of our in our generation are bearing, because of the changing role of people needing to have a college degree in order to get entry-level work, are working class. That the working class isn't like, you would see in the 60s or in the 50s, where it's just somebody who works a manual job. It's those folks and people who are workers. And so we miss the boat when we dismiss folks who are college educated, people who are tech workers, et cetera. My mom was not a college graduate when I was growing up, and she worked in an office. She worked in a call center for the majority of my life. She is working class. And just like the people who we see now who are baristas, who are Uber drivers, those folks are working class who are, scraping together, change and robbing Peter to pay Paul. And I posit because of the changing economy, right, that we've got a lot of our tech workers who are mid and entry level folks who also are working class because the cost of living, the cost to get into those jobs, and the fleeting nature of being able to secure and maintain those jobs are also working class people who experience the same massive economic forces of the rising cost of housing, the stagnant wages, et cetera.
I think that the political classes and the elite classes, they try to always separate us
That's
many
right.
times, but we are all the working class. So then, what was it, Brandon, that you would say about Dr. Abdul-Al-Sayed's message and his candidacy that you liked and that the WFP liked and ended up endorsing?
Yeah, I think, thinking back farther to Dr. Abdul-Sayed's message in 2018 is this idea that the structure, the system that we exist in, the current political state, limiting who gets to participate and limiting who gets to see themselves as valid and their voices actually be heard is something that was really interesting to me. Thinking about his previous run and then this run, really naming and identifying again, those causes of, in our political system, but then, having identifiable solutions around money out of politics, money in the pockets of Michiganders and Americans, and then, fighting for Medicaid for all, are things that made me gravitate to his campaign. And then I would say, similarly, with the Working Families Party, again, we're a coalition of organizations. So we've got community groups and labor unions and doing that balancing act of how do you make sure that, our friends at the AFT who are members, as well as our friends at Michigan United, for example, their membership are able to hear a vision that resonates with both of them. And, Dr. El-Sayed, as well as Will Lawrence, as well as Donovan McKinney, were able to do that because they talked about fighting for real people, making sure our communities are heard, and then actually taking on this consolidated and concentrated corporate power that's keeping our folks down.
Not sure if you could answer this, but it's something you're hearing a lot of debate back and forth about this past primary is that Dr. Abdul didn't really do as well in areas such as Detroit or Saginaw, Flint. So you hear the criticism saying, oh, he didn't do really that well in urban areas, so the progressive message isn't really reaching there. Yet at the same time, as you've just mentioned, we have Donovan McKinney winning
That's
big in these areas. So
right.
what does that all tell you? What do you
Yeah.
draw from all that?
The first thing is that like some of these pundits who are trying to make that case are like twisting themselves and pretzels to make these arguments. We're taping on Wednesday, right? And just last night, Angie Nixon in Florida won, as a black woman, Democratic socialist, winning in deep Florida, one of the same issues. And so these arguments that are made that like black folks don't care about progressive policies, that these aren't the issues, is just utter nonsense. Again, looking back to Jesse Jackson, I think the second point is, the numbers will show that, Dr. Abdul El-Sayed lost in Detroit and lost to some of these places. And that just means there's more work to do. There's a lot of, historical baggage and sentiment between the Arab American Muslim community and black folks, between, the Arab American Muslim community and the Indian community and the Latina community. And this is an opportunity for us to do the work to say that we're stronger than fear and that we can actually do the work to build a larger movement. And he'll have to lean into that. And you see that he's doing some of that work by deepening his relationship with Martha G. Scott, who's a Wayne County commissioner, deepening that relationship with Reverend Horace Sheffield, and then engaging some of the folks who endorsed against him and maybe endorsed Haley Stevens or Valerie McMurrow. So I think that's one. And then true enough, that is a key important piece. Going back to this, oh, well, the progressives aren't winning. Yes, Donovan McKinney, black man from Detroit, working class, ran on a very similar politics and won in the city of Detroit. Now, I think that the key piece that these pundits leave out is that they both were outspent, by corporate forces, by crypto. In the case of Dr. Abdul El-Sayed, 12-1 with Donovan McKinney, I think the final breakdown for Sri Thanadar was something like Sri had like $4 million on hand compared to Donovan having like 300K or something ridiculous like that. And so there is a disparity around like campaign spending, and we understand that there is a lot of forces that go into that. And our candidates won and were able to get over the finish line because they talked about a message that resonated with people.
And finally, I would say that one reason why I think a party like the Working Families Party, WFP, is gaining some traction is primarily because what are we talking about? We've been talking about local races and we've been
That's
talking about
right.
local issues. You think that's the best way to probably get the message and to build the movement is to start local and then spread out? Unlike, I'd say, the Green Party back in the day, they kind of always just concentrated on the presidency and really didn't have much of a ground game.
And I don't want to throw minor parties and other minor parties under the bus because I know people are trying to challenge empire and build an alternative to what we see, this duopoly that we see, right? So I don't want to throw them under the bus, but like, yes, when we think about the WFP, what we are trying to do is explicitly local, right? Where the federal races are opportunities for us to have a larger stage and be able to have a larger raise a larger voice and engage people who may not have thought about economic populism, who may not have thought about like what is their role as an individual in the political party, in the left. Do they want something different? What does it mean for their candidates and for campaigns to not take corporate resources? Like, this is an opportunity for us to sort of elevate our voice. But our theory of change, to throw in a $10 word, is all about local wins, all about state level wins, all about being able to build a long and deep bench of progressive activists, again, of all races, creeds, colors, across geographies, who can run and win in these bigger seats one day, but in the meantime, are able to do good work in their cities, their townships, on their school boards, in the state house, and in the state senate.
Brandon, if people would like to learn more about Michigan's Working Families Party or would like to even volunteer their time or help out, where should they go?
Yeah, thanks. You can hit us up online, workingfamilies.org/Michigan. You can find us on all the socials at MI Working Families Party. And you can find me on all the socials at B Sneezy. So B as in boy, Sneezy, like the dwarf, 313. And we love to be able to build the party with you. Go forth and organize with us.
It was awesome getting to talk with you and getting to meet you, Brandon Snyder, Executive Director of Michigan's Working Families Party. Thanks so much. And hey, love to have you back on sometime soon, okay?
Yeah, glad to do this, Pat. Good to meet you. Let's do it again. Take it easy.
Bringing progressivism with passion each and every week. It's Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook, and the Gram. Subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. And subscribe to us on YouTube. We'd also like to thank Audio Boom for publishing the show and helping us spread our populist, progressive, and patriotic message. Speaking of which, Let's get back to the show with Pat.
Special thanks to Brandon Snyder of the Michigan Working Families Party for joining us. I'll provide links to their site, and also I'll provide his email so that way you can learn more and you can find out how to help out with their effort. You know, Brandon did bring up something real insightful that I have been blind to here for quite some time, and that's when he reminded us how Jesse Jackson won the 84 and 88 Democratic presidential primaries right here in Michigan, which just shows that Michigan's kind of always been in a populist mood, maybe more than most other states. Time now for the Left of Lansing weekly poll. Will Florida Mike Rogers debate Abdul Al-Sayed? Yes, no, or of course not, since he's a corporate MAGA coward. Those are your choices. Vote on Left of Lansing's Patreon page, Twitter page, or on our YouTube page. Now, I say Florida Mike Rogers will grant a debate, or maybe two, as his poll numbers begin to slide here soon. And as Dr. Abdul said in Detroit this week,
Mike Rogers does not want to have a conversation. Rupe Rod just reported earlier today that he reached out for a debate. I've told Mike I'm happy to do five debates. But, you know, cowards, they want to shoot shots from, what, $45 million super PACs paid for by big corporations. They don't want to actually sit down and have a conversation. Right. Because if I were Mike Rogers, I wouldn't debate me either.
Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call. Well, each and every week, I share the Left of Lansing podcast with a few progressive groups on social media, including the Michigan Democratic Progressives on Facebook. And they've always been kind to let me post the show there and to help spread the progressive message with the thousands of friends and followers that they've got, even if they don't necessarily agree with everything I have to say. And that's fine. This is not supposed to always be about speaking to the choir. It's fine to disagree with me sometimes, and I like to hear your disagreements by emailing me at leftoflansing@gmail.com, because I celebrate that kind of discussion with everyone, because we are not like a MAGA cult. We're progressives. Now, one of the main administrators of Michigan Democratic Progressives commented on our episode last week that featured Livingston County progressive and strong union fighter Casey Helton, and I would like to read the comment because it was good. So it reads, I don't think you brought it up with Casey, but it's really disappointing that William Lawrence recently came out in support of Hakeem Jeffries. Now, they were referencing how progressive Democratic nominee for Michigan's 7th Congressional District, William Lawrence, announced that if elected, he'd back House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries to become Speaker of the House if, and that's a big if, Democrats regain control of the House of Representatives next year. Now, I would like to read Casey Helton's response before I give you my response. And this is what Casey wrote. She said, I'm no fan of Jeffries, but I think it's important to prioritize victory by building a unified coalition above all else and save the intra-party battles for a future date. Let's get across the finish line first. That's my take. Look, was I fired up to watch William Lawrence suddenly say that he'd support Hakeem Jeffries if elected? No, I was not at all. And then I really wasn't about Jeffries telling Meet the Press on NBC last weekend that he would never back a Medicare for All push if Democrats take over the House. It just shows again, he's so out of touch and he is the worst kind of Democrat. But to echo Casey's sentiment, I'm for getting the win first and then let's see what the landscape looks like after the battle is won. Not just for Williams' race against the MAGA Republican Congressman Tom Barrett, who welcomed House Speaker Mike Johnson to Michigan this week. And Mike Johnson said that data centers rock. Keep inviting him more, Tom. Keep inviting Mike Johnson here more. Good luck with that strategy. But I'm for looking at the overall landscape in Michigan and throughout the country after this election and then seeing where we are. I'm not giving grace to some establishment Democrats or cheerleaders who are still fighting against progressive and democratic socialist candidates who actually won their races in primaries. But for those that decided to back progressive candidates, even though we understand they wanted establishment AIPAC figures to win, I'm going to give them a little grace and a little leeway. Now, William Lawrence already announced that while he still will never accept corporate PAC money, some money that is spent on his behalf for this race will come from some that he doesn't agree with 100% of the time. But this is war, and he's going for the win. Look, we've got to win now, and then the other battles will just have to take place afterwards. Abdul Al-Sayed backed Kamala Harris's campaign, even though he disagreed with the Biden administration's embrace of Israel's genocidal campaign in Gaza. But once Joe Biden stepped aside, Dr. Abdul backed Kamala Harris because for him, it was democracy over fascism. It was democracy over corporate authoritarianism. And now Kamala Harris has repaid Dr. Abdul by backing his campaign, which is great on the former VP's part and can only help Dr. Abdul gain more much-needed goodwill with some black voters. So no, I'm not thrilled when I see some of my working class progressives accept establishment endorsements, but well, guess what, everyone? That's politics sometimes. Progressive victories have to happen first in the primaries, next in November, and then we'll move on to the next battles.
You're listening to Left of Lansing. Music for the show and everything else on Left of Lansing is provided by Wanderbeats. To hear the latest project and complete music archives, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site or subscribe to Space Leopard on YouTube. Now, back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Left of Lansing. Special thanks to Brandon Snyder from the Michigan Working Families Party for joining us here this week. Next week, I'm hoping to have a Michigan Democratic Socialist of America member on the show, and this person has been on the show before. So I am very hopeful we can put that all together for next week. The Working Families Party this week and the DSA next week. Hey, working class Michiganders, as I've said, are in a populist mood. All of us are, and it's time to have more working class voices representing us in Michigan and in D.C. And that's what I want this podcast to be about, spreading that kind of message. Thanks for listening this week, and it's always a pleasure to have all of you taking your time out of your busy schedules to listen to this little show week in and week out. It means a lot to me. I look forward to next week. Until then, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
You've been listening to Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. Left of Lansing was produced by Pat Johnston, brainstormed by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and yes, hosted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. Thanks to our good friend Rich for website assistance, and thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. We thank Audio Boom for publishing the podcast every week. Visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to Michigan's premier progressive podcast, and we'll talk with you again next week.